The glass has to be in enter into punishment first. So these are the types of commentaries which were written. That's why Prabhupada is being very strong in this case. Even while mentioning purport to Arya Krishna Paramatanta Tanpur Srimad Bhagavatam, he's mentioning because Mayavadi philosophers, they have no information regarding the transcendental service of the Lord, even after attaining liberation. And therefore, after merging into the effulgence, they don't know what has to be done. And just because of that, they must come down again to this material world to open hospitals or schools or perform some parallel philanthropic activities. So unless and until one is very clear about these particular things, actually it is not the case that Krishna is rejecting one particular path. He would say that it is very difficult. And how is it difficult? He will mention in the next couple of shlokas. Klesha Vikrasya. It is very difficult. Avyakta, it is unmanifested. Asakta, because one who are attached to this unmanifested, for them the path is klesha. Adhikta is more and more. Tesha. Avyakta is Gatir Dukham. They have a Vapya. Like, for it is very troublesome to advance in this particular method of gaining spirituality. So, even Prabodhanand Saraswati used to mention about how is this Kaivalya, how is this merging into this. Well, Prabhupada is speaking about this impersonalism. And there will be two, three categories. Like, it is not necessary that this impersonalism is always bad or it's not recommended by the Bhakti schools or but it is clearly mentioned by Krishna himself that it is very difficult and one will have to endeavor too much in comparison to the personal form of devotional service. That's why, when translating into English, Prabhupada translated into devotion or devotional practice, but he translated it into devotional service. And why did he add this particular word of service? Because until and unless there is service, there cannot be any relationship between many two persons. It can be in terms of Vatsalya, it can be in terms of Madhurya, it can be in terms of Sakya. Any five forms where there are different types of relationships. Unless and until there is no service to be rendered to the beloved, the relationship has no point at all. So that's why if there is no service, Prabhupada mentioned that even after raising till that platform, they think that what is to be done because there is nothing to be done. And the nature of the soul is Sat Chit Ananda, and it is its constitutional position is to serve the Lord. That's why Prabhupada is stressing so much on the devotional service part of it. So that's why Prabhupada Saraswati is very bold about speaking what he realizes about bhakti and what he thinks about the Kaivalya. So he says, Kaivalya Nankayate Kridasan Purukasha Pushpaya. What is this Kaivalya? Kaivalya is this nothingness of the Brahman, the effulgence. And the so-called flowery languages of the Vedas will indicate on the surface that one has to merge in the Supreme, that is the ideal form. And the common transcendentalists will even say that bhakti is the stepping stone. And you will have to use this because you are attacking the neophyte stage. And once you clear that neophyte stage or the primary stage, in the class of devotional services, then you can reject this process and finally concentrate on the Brahman, the Supreme Person. That is what one has to do. So Prabhupada mentions that what is this Kaivalya and what is this Narkaya? Like it is hellish, he is comparing that to the hellish. Because if there is no service, then there is no point to be in the below. What will we do with the below? Because wellness is mentioned in terms of service, then there is no question of exploiting or controlling or enjoying the other person. The counterpart has to actually serve and give pleasure, or always think or meditate upon giving pleasure to the other person when it comes in terms of relationship. So even people get confused into this kind of vidha Vaishnavism. That even though they might practice devotional service, or they might practice transcendentalism, or they might want to get rid of the material conception of life, so they might still get attached to the karma vidha bhakti. And they might be attached still to the fruitive works. Okay, I will do this here for the sake of Vishnu, but in terms I would want something in return, and this I want that. Or there will be some set of transcendentalists who will come under the category of Jnana Vidha Bhakti. Jnana Vidha Bhakti is again contaminated by the knowledge part of life, on the empirical knowledge which we get. And therein one might keep on meditating, this is spiritual, that is spiritual, this is good, this is bad. But still that understanding of the Supreme will remain related only to the impersonal form of life. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in many of his texts. That unless and until we give up on this karma vilavati and jnana vilavati, till that time we will not be able to go into that kshetra bhakti or the pure devotional service which Prabhupada keeps on iterating. That's why in Chaitanya Charitamrita there is a sloka which says bhakti bhukti mukti siddhikami sagale ashami krishna bhakta nishkama atateva kshami. So Krishnadasa Goswami is mentioning that just because the devotee of Krishna doesn't have any other desire other than to serve the Lord, the devotees of the Lord, he doesn't have any personal sense gratificatory plan, even on the terms of gross level or on the terms of subtle level. So that's why he can remain shunned. And that's why, if we see what is the necessity of all these aspects of theology, like when they study theology of healing, then they will say, who is the Supreme? So there might be many processes. One of them might say about pantheism, that everything is God. You can see God everywhere. And there will be certain systems which will come under the category of monism. Like only this is God. Only one, there is one form of God. So there was one philosopher called as Hegel, German philosopher. He also proposed some theories which are related to weather. And he mentioned that absolute is by itself for itself. Like how we define democracy, like by the people, for the people. So similarly, he defined about absolute. And he said absolute is by himself and for himself. That's why even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls Krishna as the supreme autocrat. Like you don't, he functions according to his will. He's not a political person. But he does it on a specific requirement to have a nice relationship or to enhance the kind of relationship which he has with the devotees. So to have a progressive life, you will have to die. That's what he will mention in continuation to this here. And how to die? He says, to die means the ego should be killed. the ego should no more be present when we are supposed to be there. And then the real self will actually come out. So what is this real self? And how is this ego supposed to die? So that's why Hisoden and Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj wrote a whole book on Die Before You Die, about what things he should have done before he left his body. So there are couple of meditations which he has written on elaborate, you know. And he thinks, if I would have done this, then it would have been better. Now is the time for my departure. And now I don't have sufficient time to take care of these particular things which I could have taken care of previously in my life. So that's why Prabhupada and other acharyas speak about absolutely supreme. Everything is meant for him. That's why you see Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwar. And until and unless one understands this, then it is he will remain ashram. And that's why even in terms of Varnashram discourses, many of our recent acharyas and even Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj specifically says that the traditional definition of religion is considered as dharma, artha, kama and moksha. So why does one do dharma? So that to earn money according to prescribed means, so that you will not get any karma for it in the process. So you need some money and you have to follow dharma to be human. So after you do that, what are you expecting? You are expecting something else, some sense directly, some money, some resources to take care of your future plans. And what are those future plans? Those future plans will constitute the karma, the desires to enjoy. And when that is done, now what should a person look for? Because even after karma, and who is the resource that the karma or the desires are completed or finished or vanquished? Nobody in this world can say that I am done with my desire. Only a frustrated person can say, like, I want to get away with it. Or a person who has actually realized himself and his relationship with the Lord, he would try and focus constantly on the devotional service. So he will not go in for selfish desires. So that's why now, because of the old age, because of the constant hankering and frustration achieved from this endeavor to fulfill one's own desires, now one wants moksha. Why one wants moksha? Because there is peacefulness. Because now I don't want this duality, because moksha or liberation is also defined in one sense as cessation of this duality, heat and warmth, or good and bad, this and that. So one wants freedom from these kind of dualities. So now I want moksha. And that is the reason one keeps on striving in that regard. So again, it's a selfish endeavor that because I have tried so much to get my desires fulfilled, now I cannot anymore. So now the best thing, or the only thing which is remaining, is to give up this desire. But it is not for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not for the ideal example of performing specific pure devotional service under the guidance of some spiritual master. So that's the reason they have to actually keep on thinking about certain ways to again get themselves engaged. So Prabhupada, in one of his lectures, he mentions that no object can exist without a subject. If there is an object, there has to be a certain subject. If we have to understand the principle behind these particular impersonalism and personalism. Then we will go a little bit one step deeper into this understanding. So no thing can exist without a thinker. It might sound a little odd in this audience. But if a thing has to exist, then a thinker has to exist. So nothing can exist on its own. And what is this thing and what is this thinker? So it is mentioned that let's say we have to dig or investigate about some fossils. And how will we understand it? We'll excavate earth and find that okay, this is the type of color, this is the kind of environment, this is the kind of soils. And this is the geological survey and these are the things which we found. So again, what is that? That is again a concept in our mind. That is again a consciousness level. That is one of the concepts of our consciousness. Like, okay, it has this color, it has that color. It is not this shape, it is this much old. These are the concepts created for the object by the thinker. So if there is an object, then whatever attribute it has, it must be reflected in the consciousness of a subject. Otherwise no existence is possible. Because that's why there are scientists or people who say that everything came from chance. Because they don't understand this particular concept that for a subject to exist, there has to have some object. Or if the object is any object or any thing is existing, then a thinker or a subject or consciousness has to be present. So that's why Prabhupada, speaking in terms of Ishopanishad, he speaks that one can gather this kind of knowledge from various sources. He majorly speaks about Pratyaksha Pramana, Shabda Pramana, Anumana. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also elaborates these types of Pramanas in few categories. In terms of Pratyaksha Pramana, because we don't know what is the final thing. So that's why if one has to investigate or understand all his work, then the first step which comes in mind is Pratyaksha Pramana, that I want to see. So that's why many people ask us, that have you seen God? So that's why Prabhupada says, but I may or may not have seen God, but I know the process by which actually you can see God. So that's where we have that initial Brahman, which Vedas are given, this Pratyaksha, that the things should be perceived by my senses. So I should be able to touch, smell, see, whatever. According to my senses, I should be able to get some knowledge about a particular thing or object. The second step in terms of realization is in terms of Paroksha, which the information which we gather from various sources beyond our senses. Like for example, scientists discover certain things and they tell us, okay, Earth is round in this particular way. We haven't seen that, but we haven't specifically understood it through our experimentation. So we understand it through somebody else's experience. Somebody else's research. Then there is a third category of aparoksha. These are the ones which we even use in Hindi or Marathi or Gujarati also. Aparoksha is something which we have realized, but we haven't clearly realized yet. Like for example, the best example in terms of aparoksha is we had a deep sleep. I can say I had a deep sleep yesterday night. But if you ask me, but can you describe that deep sleep? Then I might scratch my head, I would say that I had a nice sleep. I was not disturbed. I didn't have any dreams. But it's again not a clear picture. I have experienced that. But I cannot actually reflect what I have realized in clear words, or I cannot transfer that realization to somebody else, or even for my next experience. And sometimes what happens is, it is mentioned in the philosophical terms that the subject and material object, because now we are thinking or trying to understand more attributes of this object, and while we are trying to understand this, sometimes the subject is so much engrossed with the material object that it becomes confused. So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur specifically writes that this is the level till the point Shankaracharya specifically explained this kind of philosophy. That he was not able to mention that what will happen to your consciousness after, because the whole reason it is mentioned in Padma Purana that the Devi, Parvati Devi is asking, and Vishnu is saying that who is supposed to do this propagation of this kind of Maya philosophy, the impersonalist kind of philosophy. So there will be a Brahmana who will come and like Lord Shiva will have to take the form of Brahmana in Kali Yuga and propagate this particular theory. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that there is no need of criticizing Shankaracharya, because he had to save the world from Buddhism, the void is that there is nothing and there is no God. Even till today there is confusion among different sects of Buddhists about whether there is God and what kind of God it is. So this is kind of aparoksha that people are getting confused. So the next level which is mentioned by Ramanujacharya Saraswati and some other Vaishnava Acharya is in terms of adbhuksha, beyond our senses. And the beyond our senses comparison, they also consider that everything is one. But the analogy given by Ramanujacharya is a green parrot entered for a green bee. So, externally seeing it might appear that now it has merged. But it has not merged. The parrot has always maintained its identity and it has now just taken shelter of the green tree, wherein coincidentally the colors are matching and the external observer is not able to see the objects and not able to distinguish amongst the factors. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes one step further and he speaks in terms of the fifth stage of realization or acquiring knowledge, wherein he says that the nature of the object is so much revealed in terms of even material specifications, that there is no need to separately distinguish between what is material matter and what is spirit. It only will depend on the consciousness of the observer. So that's why they say, that's why Prabhupada reiterated in many of his purports. He said, what is matter and what is spirit? He said that if you utilize a particular thing, he gives an example of this microphone. He says, externally you can consider or categorize this particular object in terms of matter. But he says, if you use this for singing some mundane song, then it actually becomes matter, and that is, the activity is also considered as material activity. But if the same thing is used for doing bhajan, kirtan, or things related to Krishna and devotional service, then the same matter is now considered as a spiritual object. And that's what Rupa Goswami clears in various of his books. So that is the highest level of realization in terms of object and the subject, however, the thing and the thinker. So there are various methodologies, because the child cannot understand, because we see child has to mostly go through these kind of stages and then he starts realizing. And here it is mentioned, so and that to come to this perfect level, one has to have love for the beloved. That's what Prabhupada specifically writes in the introduction of Nectar of Devotion. He keeps on writing that one has to have this kind of service mood. Because unless and until that service is there, because everybody wants to do something for the satisfaction of the beloved. Whether it is in terms of any of these five categories, Vatsalya, Sakshya, Madhurya. So one has to keep on reiterating these particular facts of Bhakti. Every now and then, we don't want to go to this particular line of transcendentalist teachers. So that's why again in Ishvapanishad there are two shlokas which specifically say that, oh my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. So that's why Prabhupada gives an exchange in this purport. He says that just like a sun, and he speaks about now these three types of realizations. Now this was in terms of understanding the information related to that object. But now he starts speaking about the Supreme Personality of God. He says the first realization is like Brahman, the second realization is Paramatma, the third is Bhagavan. So in terms of Brahman realization, he says that there is a sun, planet, and there are sun, moon, there are living entities who are sharing there, and there are sun rays. So initially we might just see the sun rays from a distance, and that is what we can observe. But if one is satisfied up to in that particular level, then he has no identification of what is going to be next level of knowledge. And the next thing he realizes is he can see Paramatma or the localized feature of the Supreme Personality everywhere in each living entity. That is in terms of chit. And then the third stage comes in terms of ananda, wherein we start having or understanding who is Bhagavan. And who is this person, who is the Supreme Person. Because we are not just being satisfied by just seeing a particular thing. But another example which Prabhupada and Acharya gave is if we see a scenic place from a distance, it might appear very wonderful. We take a step ahead and then we might see, okay, there are few huts, few mountains, few rivers passing in this area. We go one more step, we climb the mountain, we enter inside that hut, and we find people and we have a discussion with them. We have a new relationship with those persons. But if we would have remained at the first experience level, then we wouldn't have actually got the experience of the final stage of the relationship, of meeting those persons, having a relationship with that person. So just by saying that this beyond this nothing exists is in one sense a limited understanding of the Supreme Person. So that is why Prabhupada keeps on iterating about these things. So in one example of in Prabhupada's life specifically, once they were in Punjab and there was one person who was debating with Prabhupada and specifically Guru Das Prabhu about how the Supreme Person is not a person but it is an impersonal realization. So they said okay, they had a long debate and later it came that everybody slept and it was winter and in Punjab province in India it is very cold. So this person is extremely shivering, very much troubled by the cold. So he gets up and comes to Buddha's room and says, it is very much cold here. Can you do something for me? Prabhupada finally says, the devotee says, he hears the rug within which will protect that person from the cold. So he just removes one thread from it and says, this is for your cold. Go and sleep. Finally, they almost think him adamant, then accept that just like you cannot merge, or this one part cannot be equivalent to the whole part. That's why Prabhupada keeps on mentioning about the qualitative oneness and the quantitative oneness of the living entity with the supreme entity. So that's why finally that person had to admit in front of Prabhupada that whatever conceptions he had were not complete. He had to admit because he needed that blanket of earth to protect him from the cold at that time. So unless and until, again as Prabhupada mentions, that one understands that yes, Krishna and the living entities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities, however insignificant they might be, they are qualitatively same, they will have the same qualities. But the quantity will differ. The kind of beauty one has will differ from what Krishna has. We might categorize somebody in terms of beautiful, in terms of powerful, in terms of wealthy, but there is a limit to each of these factors, and one has to understand the bigger picture in various things. So that's why Prabhupada in this particular purport kept on just summarizing that if you have this, then you will have the remaining part also. If you have the personality of God, like for example, you have a nice relationship with the sun planet or sun god, then naturally you are going to get the other facilities of that particular planet. So unless and until a person realizes this Bhagavan aspect of the world, till that time he will just keep on debating and remain unsatisfied in the level of Brahman and Paramatma. So one has to keep on. And again, it's not very easy to meditate on this impersonal, because again it's the activity of the mind. So that's why one of my friends, he became a sannyasi in some other entity. And after 10 years they gave him sannyas. And recently I met him. After 10 years we were studying together. And after 10 years suddenly I met him. And I was asking him, he believes in the impersonal form. He believes in the impersonal methodologies of approaching God. But just to elaborate what Prabhupada is saying, that how people are confused and they are in turn confusing the next generation of transcendentalists, which we can see. So I met this person, we had a discussion about various things. And when I asked him, what are your services here? So he was taking care of one of the educational institutes which we had. At the same time in the evening they had, he personally had a service to perform aarti to their founder Acharya. But then when I asked him that how come you can do aarti when you are believer of impersonal feature of the God, and forget about God, you are now worshipping somebody as a person. So what will happen to you? So he says, you are getting confused because they have studied Vedas and they regret that they know more than the devotional people, because they categorize the devotees under a sentimental kind of growth, wherein you need this as a primary step and you keep on clinging to it. So he said, the arti which I perform, or the service which I have been given, is a part of my ashrama. This is just a part of my sadhana. But my final goal is to merge. Final goal is to be. Be that impersonal, or be that Brahman, myself. So that is the kind of understanding. That this is a temporary shell. Even if I need a guru, it is compared by them as a ladder which I use to climb to the next floor. And once I go there, I no more need this particular ladder. So unless and until one is very clear about these impersonal and personal features of Sarvama, so I think then I will conclude with one of the conversations of Srila Prabhupada again. Somebody asked Prabhupada, finally, how is Krishna? How is God? Is he personal or is he impersonal? So Prabhupada answered in one line, in one of the sections. He says, first of all, we have to understand the inconceivable nature of the Lord, wherein we will understand that the Lord is both personal and impersonal. So there is not a case that is taken, he is only this or that. But again, as Krishna will explain himself in the coming shlokas to come, that how the other way is also possible, but how it is difficult, and how there are possibilities that people might get distracted and even think in terms of becoming Brahman themselves, and in turn disturbing the next generation of transcendentalists. So that was what I specifically understood from this story. I'll stop here in case anybody has any questions or comments. So he is not biased in any sense. of them. But if one has to have relationship, then there has to be love. And to develop love, there has to be persons involved. Or at least a dog or a cat involved. Because these days, mostly what we see is in Western worlds or some examples which may be, is some rich people giving up their wealth after their death to their pets. The reason being, there is nobody which they felt they had a close relationship. So it was only a particular. You cannot love a particular object. There has to be some person involved in the relationship. So this is one level of understanding. That doesn't mean that they are to be rejected or they are to be doomed for eternity. We'll have to face the consequences if we mislead people into going to pure devotional service. That one has to go through. But unless and until one realizes these two facts, because for example, Prabhupada also has given us the ultimate thing, the complete process to achieve pure devotional service. But are we up to that level? We are also not. We are struggling and suffering. So still somebody is tolerating us. So similarly, Krishna, as of our Supreme Personality, he will be accommodating all these categories of living entities. And seeing to it that they somehow or other get generalized into the perfect path.
Different levels like Shankaracharya and Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya. So if you say that, see, the philosophy evolves from a personal to an impersonal approach, Ramanujacharya talked about Vishishta Prayra, Madhvacharya about Vishuddha Prayra, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about Achintya Jnanadeva. So here we see that besides Madhvacharya, who propounded the doctrine of Shuddhadvaita, all the other philosophers are compromising with Mayavada. Because if you see Ramanujacharya, he specifically mentions that qualitative oneness in his philosophy. And other philosophers, also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says that Achintya, it's not that God is completely personal or he is completely impersonal, so he comes in between. But our, Prabhupada specifically, he made this mention that we don't have any problem with Shankaracharya, but we have waged a war against his philosophy. So how can we, our previous acharyas, they don't have any issue with Mayavada's philosophy, then how can they, they are in some terms compromising with the impersonal school, but we are waging a war against Mayavadis. How it is?
The first thing which you mentioned was about the previous acharyas, about Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is not that they have compromised themselves with the Mayavadi philosophy. Because, for example, Prabhupada many times about elaborating on Shankaracharya's philosophy, he says, he has given nothing but a hidden Buddhism. Because people were going for voiding, he had to give them one higher step. You cannot directly give the audience the complete step immediately. Then from that Ramanujacharya, he said about the Vishishta Advaita. That's why I gave that example of that, yes, qualitatively it is one. That the parrot might appear to be merged into that tree, but it is not. So that is the second step. He is not agreeing with the whole concept. He is still maintaining the differentiation of the parent and the tree, similar to the supreme living entity and the simple living entity, or the jiva. And Madhvacharya, he gave about Vishishtha Dvaita. He says that exclusively they are different. And if you read their commentary, or one of the things which Madhvacharya specifically mentions, if one even just hears, it is like the way we take vows of chanting 16 rounds and following principles. Madhvacharya actually has recommended that one should take a vow after following his philosophy to just break this maya of philosophy. And if one doesn't do that, then he is offensive to that Vaishnava school of thought. So there is no way that he is compromising with the maya or the impersonalist aspect of it. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the whole broader perspective to everything. Because here, again, Yukta Vairagya or things like that, Achinta Vairagya, that will come. But what is the utility of a particular object? Because we are seeing in terms of object and subject, or the consciousness behind that. So again, Mahaprabhu is clearing the whole concept. Forget about anything. Just use whatever you have, whatever resources, in terms of matter or spirit or in any external categorization, and use them in Krishna service. So that is the highest level which he proposes. And without that, how difficult it would have been to function. Just imagine if we have to follow the strict Madhva rules or strict Sri Sampradaya rules in today's day and age. It's very difficult to follow that, or to actually go one step ahead and get all these people under one umbrella or in the direction of devotional service. Because there was no acharya before Prabhupada who kind of stayed in that New York, Bali and some filthy places like that and accepted anyone and everyone. He accepted even us, comparing our US life. And now he is giving us the chance to purify ourselves through this philosophy. So these acharyas, they are not compromising on any way, by any means. They are giving one step at a time and progressing towards the whole. That's why many acharyas, recent acharyas, they say that for all Mahaprabhu's concepts to get propagated, they had to play a role in between. Well, that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as I mentioned, he said we cannot criticize Shankara for that. Why did he do this? So tomorrow we will even criticize Lord Buddha for propagating that kind of philosophy. That why did he have to mention this kind of philosophy? Because the whole purpose was that the people were not following Vedas. They were using Vedas for their personal sense gratification. So he has to give some solution. So it is again according to time, place, circumstance, each acharya will give a particular facet which people will follow and go ahead.
You covered the basic aspect of that. Now, Mayavadi and the Kama is something that different form we have mentioned. Because they are more offensive actually. Here we are talking about that impersonalism and impersonalism is with the Brahmavadis. So those who accept Krishna, but they consider Krishna as an impersonal form to be supreme. Because Mayavadi actually they think that the Krishna already exists in human form, they don't consider him as supreme. They consider just like everybody, any normal human, and they think that Krishna also comes under the influence of three modes of material nature. So that is, they have no concept of Krishna's supremacy position. So that is why Prabhupada said that we are really offensive. And so that's in a completely different ballgame we are talking about Mayavadi things.
Yeah.
But the discussion took place about Brahmavadi versus the personalist. And Prabhupada actually makes comments in Bhagavatam also that talks about that he actually glorifies Brahmavadi also. Brahmavadi is also considered like a, that comes to a complete platform that, you know, it's just a matter of their approach is very different. And Isha Upanishad, so Isha Upanishad makes very clear distinction. Krishna has both personal and impersonal form. And as in Bhagavad Gita, he says that Maya Gatam Sarvamidam Jagat Avyakta Murtiram. So I pervade in my impersonal, unmanifest form through these energies, through these expansions. But as person, he is in Gola Vrindavana and he is involved with his pastimes, very intimate pastimes with his devotees. But the maintenance of this universe, running of the universe on a day to day basis, that is thus by impersonal aspect, energy, expansion, and also some of his expansion, the super soul, by which he invades, pervades the entire universe. So I just thought that much would be. So Mayavadi is completely on a different body and get on water.
So you were saying, as far as the comment, like, we cannot, like, in terms of impersonal, there will be various sections again in Brahmavadi and pure Mayavadi who want to criticize Krishna for not being a person. They cannot just accept that Krishna is a person. Similarly, there are people who propagate this bunch of persons, and wherein they will worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of the universal form. And they will even say that, as probably like you mentioned, that he is also bound by the karma rules and regulations. And finally, after worshipping these five gods or demigods, then finally they have to merge into that Brahman. So there are various schools of thought, even in this impersonal. In this short time, we cannot actually go into details of these things. That is kind of touch some of these issues in terms of realization, like how people realize this supreme truth. Is there anything more?
Yes,
sir.
I'm sorry because you have had an interesting discussion on this. So you were talking about that instance where Prabhupada was talking to the Punjabi gentleman and he removed that thread and you know, we analogically he proved that you know how the difference between the phone blanket and the thread is. That was a very striking example for me because there has been a question lingering in my mind for long about the qualitative oneness between the Anu and the Vipu, the Supreme and the Jiva. Suppose you take any object, you know, it has got some attributes, and another object, it also has got the same attributes. Now if you divide that object into you know, some smaller portions, so that object which is divided into the smaller portion will have the same attributes of the source.
Yeah.
So now you are saying that both are qualitatively one. Now if the divided portion needs to exist, so it can exist independent of the source because it has got all the attributes to fulfill it in its own dominion. So how can you say that the Jiva, who is coming from the Supreme Lord, he, you know, he cannot coexist because we are totally dependent upon the Supreme. That's what Vaishnava philosophy is. So how we have qualitative oneness with the Supreme, but at the same time we cannot be in a totally independent of the existence of the Supreme. because there is no clear cut answer I have not found in any of the books, because other Vaishnava schools, they give a very good explanation for this. So how do you explain that?
What I specifically understand from this shloka, maybe it may possibly can add. The whole concept comes because of the living entity of the divided entity has that freedom to be with the Supreme or to not be with the Supreme. But then, does that really mean that the separated part is now completely independent and he can do whatever things he wants? Yeah, we take that object and we divide that object into parts and the sub-object. Is he now completely free to be independent of the main parent object? No, he is not. He is still, although he has a free will to function according to his whims, for which Krishna has created this material world so that we can function as if we are like him in this material world. But still, are we completely free here? Tomorrow, if I desire something, are my desires getting fulfilled? Because actually, I have free will, so that everything should have been possible according to the theoretical definition. But it is not. That means I have been limited by the boundary of karmas. And I will be able to function freely only in that specified area of the living. And there I can function freely. But beyond that, something, like tomorrow if I deserve 10 lakhs or 10 million dollars, that is beyond my karma. So, although I have free will, I can have free will to ask a few dollars. But beyond that, I don't have my karma. So, although the free will is there, that free will is not complete. So, still the living entity is being controlled by the Supreme Entity, by these kind of arrangements. And these arrangements are done so that one day it realizes that it cannot be independent from the living. So finally it has to get itself linked to that parent object. And so what has been done by linking to it? The only thing remains is to serve. Because love has to be shown through service. Because I cannot simply say that I love someone. Finally, it has to land, or land up into service. I think I have studied a right answer. Maybe it's not the time of love, so we'll discuss it later. Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita,
Krishna, 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 Krish